Beloved listeners, and welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, thrilled and delighted to be your host again today. Ooh, yes! And you know, here at Advanced Living Radio, we have a theme. We're here to add value. And I get inspired because I have a mission. My mission is to find and share whatever is needed to joyously reunite everyone with their source, whatever they deem that to be. And I believe that when we think, feel, and act from the idea that we are always connected to Source, then grace prevails and total wellness is restored. With that in mind, daily I pray, Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun, inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously, experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Oh, yeah, we're on a path. We've got a mission. Here we go, week by week, bringing you something to help support you on your path. And today is a very special day. And before we get started with a treat, let me take a moment to invite you to honor our sponsor, AdvancedLiving.com, home of the comfort technology. Folks call it a Clark Kent clock with superpowers. It looks like a plain digital clock you'd see on your nightstand or your desk. But when you plug it in, it's like having the Dalai Lama show up and meditate in your room. It beats the EMF pollution that's all around us, electro pollution, and it helps create some relaxation and clearer thinking. Check out AdvancedLiving.com. And now, oh boy, how many times have you wondered, have you thought to yourself, is this all there is? What's going on? And we have a wonderful guest today who wrote a book titled, Where Am I Going? Moving from Religious Tourist to Spiritual Explorer. And it's a profound journey and travel guide done by Michelle Cromer. Well, you are in for a treat, folks. You might go, well, who is Michelle if you haven't heard of her yet? Well, this woman is going to thrill and delight you. She grew up in Texas And, of course, as the years have gone by, no longer has the big hair. She looks more modern, and she's a wife and a mom and a best-selling author and a salsa dancer in training. And she's an ex-corporate drone, she says, because we know what the corporate life can sometimes be like. And she conducts workshops now in which participants learn how to tap into a deep well of spirituality, serenity, and purpose. And she's a woman of contradictions, which we'll be discovering a little bit more about, because she believes that spirituality and capitalism can coexist. Oh, my gosh, I can't wait to see how this could happen. And, and that you have to sit still to get somewhere. and that despite her best efforts, there are some questions for which the answers only come when you stop asking. That's working smarter, not harder. Now, she lives with her husband and two boys in El Paso, Texas, and the sweet city El Paso, where you can't walk to the mailbox without stumbling into a mountain. So, welcome, Michelle.
Thank you, Ken, so much. It's so delighted to be with you this evening.
Well, it's a mutual pleasure, and it's exciting because you've got this wonderful book, Where Am I Going, with this beautiful pink suitcase on the cover.
Thank you.
And would you help us to learn a little bit? What got you writing this book?
Well, Kenneth, I wrote the book because I, like a lot of people and most of your listeners, I imagine, I wanted some answers to these deep questions I was having, and I didn't find them in the religious texts or in the spirituality books that I had studied over the years, and I wasn't getting my personal answers. And although they, you know, they were packed with wisdom and all of that, some of them were just too serious or too academic or too woo-woo. And so whenever I asked my friends about spirituality, they would launch into some story about their traditionally religious grandmother or the, you know, the TV evangelist, and neither was working for me. So I thought, well, I'm going to write a book, and maybe I can talk about these adventures and help one person or two along the way.
Hmm. Oh, boy. Well, that's pretty fun. Now, in your book, there's a part of it that's called The Age of Meaning.
Right, right. Yeah. And I really think that that's where we are right now. It's this time in your life where you finally wake up and you ask yourself these really deep questions that propel you to discover who you were born to be. And, of course, that leads you to an understanding of your life's deeper purpose. Anytime you're standing in the middle of your life and you're saying, you know what, I got the job that I want, I'm married to the person I want, I have the house that I want, is this it? Or, like many of us, are standing in the middle of chaos and crisis going, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Another challenge. I don't know what I'm going to do. This is all about the age of meaning and us trying to just figure it all out.
Mm. Wow. Wow. Okay.
Are you going through, I mean, don't you think people are either going into a crisis, they're in the middle of a crisis, or they're coming out of a crisis, and that's life. But especially now, it's crazy out there, Kenneth. I'm telling you, it is crazy. Everywhere you go, things are changing rapidly. I've never seen anything like it in my life. And so the only thing I think that we can really do to meet these challenges is to figure our crazy self out so that it doesn't matter what's happening on the outside. We can only control what's happening on the inside, and trying to find that center and that balance in the middle of all this confusion is really something that I think would help everybody.
Yeah. Oh, I'm certain of that, and excited to dive deeper into what you're doing, because to me, I had looked at religious teachings and I thought, okay, guidelines for life. I looked at the planet and said, Jesus, this place is looking like it could be improved upon just a little bit here or there.
Right.
And or maybe massively, if you actually want my real opinion.
Right.
And I said, well, we were given 10 commandments, and maybe did they just throw them into a hat and draw them out randomly, or did they come in some order for some reason?
Right.
And so that started me looking at the vision of, okay, what is it about connecting to our Creator? And that didn't have, and I noticed in the commandments, it wasn't like you will follow a particular religion. That wasn't included. It was like commune with God.
Right, because religion is what, Kenneth, man-made. It's a dogma that, you know, and I have nothing against religion. I really don't, and I think it's important in communities, and it's a congregational effort, and I know that the church that I belong to certainly reaches out in the community, and that's why I'm associated with that church. But religion is a group experience, and spirituality is a personal experience with the source, as far as I'm concerned.
Ah, well, now, how does this perhaps tie in, because you use a term that I really love, religious tourism.
Right, and that's, you know, that's me. I'm a religious tourist because I, even though I studied theology in college, I also have a comparative religion degree as well, because I'm fascinated with what people believe. If you know what somebody believes, then you know how really they're going to respond to certain things in their life and the important issues in life. So that was me. I was definitely a religious tourist, and I started thinking, you know, maybe all this man-made stuff is good, but maybe there's something deeper, more meaningful, and that's why I started on my spiritual exploration.
Hmm. Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. I was getting a little bit of the detail of what you've done as this spiritual explorer. Would you share in more depth? I mean, gosh.
Oh, sure. Sure. Well, I have stages, I think, that we all go through in my book, Where Am I Going? And the first stage is the wake-up call. We all get it. Everyone gets a wake-up call. It's our birthright. The wake-up call can be as simple as it could be a car accident. It could be a diabetes. It could be anything that's personal to you that makes you stop and say, oh, my goodness, is there more to life? Is this really it? Then I think you go into, if you're me, you go into the denial stage because we're fearful of change. That didn't mean anything to me. My life is fine. The death of my parents are going to come and go. You know, we don't want to get deeper into it. So then you're discussing the third stage, which is, I really made it a career. I liked it so much, searching for deeper spiritual meaning. And because I've had a great deal of theology in both the Torah and the Christian New Testament, I wanted to go and branch out and just experience, not just in textbooks like I had studied my whole life, but go around the world and really look at ancient civilizations and what they believed, like the Incas and Chichen Itza, the Aztecs. And I wanted to go to Tibet, which I've been to twice now, and I wanted to really see that type of Buddhism and study that and be with the monks. And I just have to tell you, I went in 2006 for the first time to Tibet, and it was before the railroad came in bringing 700,000 tourists. Actually, it's even more than that, from all over China. And there were still a great number of monks and the Tibetan people, and I had these wonderful experiences and got to go to the Jokhan Temple without any obstruction. It was just terrific. And I took my oldest son, who just graduated from high school, and our last mother-son trip, and he said, Mom, I want to go to Tibet. And I tried to talk him out of it because it's a difficult trip. It's never been easy to get to the roof of the world, believe me. It's very, very hard. And we came in through India so that I wanted to walk around and hike around and study Hindu, so we did that, and then we went over to Kathmandu, and they closed the borders on us, and we nearly didn't get in, but we did, and I was absolutely shocked at the difference just 6 years can make. There has been 5,000 Tibetans have been brutally just murdered, off the planet, gone, no longer exist, and nobody knows about it in the Western world. There were only older Tibetan women left. Chinese military was everywhere. It was, and the monks have cameras now all in their monasteries, and it's just a travesty what is happening to the people of Tibet. But to your original question, yes, I've gone all over the world and all over the United States seeking different ways to experience the divine.
Hmm. Wow. For people to, I'm wondering, in your book, do you share some of the tidbits of different things that you've gleaned in these travels?
Yes, I do. And one of the things, Kenneth, that I think is really important, well, most world religions teach five dominant spiritual practices for connecting to the source: meditation, prayer, study, service, and giving. And I have four spiritual disciplines that I have found really anchor me because, again, the only thing that we can change is our perception to what we deem reality to be, right? So every single day, I get up at 4:30 in the morning. Yes, that is unbelievable hard. It's really, really difficult, but I love to be awake before the world is awake. And I study, I pray, I meditate, and I exercise, and I sit in silence. People may not think exercise is that big of a deal. It's not just yoga, which I do also, but moving that energy around is really important as well, and getting that stamina for this mission we call life. It's just most days, you know, really they take, you know, all of you to show up and be present and really try to understand yourself. I think that's what it's all about, being authentic. Don't you think, Kenneth? Aren't we here to figure ourselves out so that we can show up in all our relationships and be our authentic self? And what the heck does that mean, right? That word is thrown around.
Oh, yeah.
Let's be
authentic. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, how do we do that?
How do we do that? Right. Well, you know, I think it's like an onion, and you just start peeling away these layers of yourself, and not all of them smell good, like an onion doesn't smell good. And that's, you know, that I just think that's why we're here. Most people just, you know, really don't give it much thought, and that just shocks me. But that's what I wanted to do with my book, Where Am I Going? I really wanted to understand the hidden parts of me, the shallow parts of me, which there certainly are, all the parts of me. And even though it's an ongoing process, I think that I've come a long way and shared this journey with my readers. But at the end of the day, Kenneth, it's all about service and giving back. And if you can just make a difference in one person's life, if we just all had that attitude, just one random act of kindness every day, wouldn't that be amazing?
Yes, another wonderful Texan that you might like, Zig Ziglar.
Oh, right, exactly.
He had a wonderful thought, and it was just basically, if you're not feeling good and you want to feel better quickly, go do something for someone else.
Right, and my grandmother used to say, if you're sweating the small stuff, go find somebody with big stuff. In other words, your problems, of course, are important to you, and they're, you know, certainly they could be big to you. But let's just say, for example, I live in El Paso, Texas, and we have almost 1 million people here, and we had 5 murders last year. We had one in January, then we had another one in September, and then and 3 more at the end of the year. Yeah, we're the safest city in the United States. Well,
that's amazing.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. I can step, I'm getting out of my chair, I'm looking out my window, and I can see Ciudad Juarez, where they have 8 murders a day. Last year, they had 3,111 murders. So that's another reason why I started this charity, Pink Crosses, which is over in Juarez, because whatever problems I'm having in this life that I, you know, my world, they are in pale comparison to what is happening just 5 miles from where I'm sitting. So sweating the small stuff is, you know, is not really on my radar anymore. I'm really trying to reach out and branch out. And if I could, let me talk about my charity just for a second.
Oh, please.
There's, in Ciudad Juarez, unfortunately, there's a very class-conscious society. And so there are girls, over 600, that were going back and forth to their 50-cent-a-day job, and they were getting kidnapped and, unfortunately, not murdered right away, tortured and God knows what, before they were finally murdered. And then these horrible people that were doing this would just drive by and throw their bones out of the side of the road and went into the barrios, which is I'm trying to think of an English word for that. I don't even know if I know of an English word. It's a section of town that doesn't have running water, and people typically live in cardboard boxes if they can find one. And these humble people would build a cross, and they would paint it pink because they knew that it was a girl, and that's why my charity is called Pink Crosses. So initially what we were trying to do is just bring some comfort and closure to these poor families who are trying to figure out where their daughters are. So the late, great Frank Bender from Philadelphia, a world-famous forensic artist, came down here and actually molded faces onto skulls, and we were able to take photographs. Arnie Svensson from New York donated his time and came down here, and we took photographs and put those circulars throughout Walmart, throughout Mexico. And do you know what, Kenneth? We found some, we did make some identifications. And it was very powerful. And so now what my foundation is doing is educating the sisters of the victims. The only way Mexico is going to change is to educate the women. So we're in that stage, and that's what I'm talking about in giving back in my book, Where Am I Going? That's the seventh stage. How can we serve? And you know what? Serving is different than volunteering, because I can pick and choose what I volunteer. I can write a check. It might hurt me a little bit, but not that much. But you and I and all of your listeners every single day can find a way to serve, and it doesn't have to cost us a dime. We can see someone at the Target having a bad day as we're checking out, and try to make them smile or ease their pain just a little bit. It doesn't cost us anything but awareness, don't you think?
Oh, totally, Michelle. To me, it's so profound because I have seen over the years on the phone, I'll be doing, I have a bit of a playful nature, and so I might be calling for some information from a company or calling in on a customer service thing, and I find myself being playful with these people.
Absolutely, and your humor brings them a little bit of laughter, and doesn't that make you feel good?
Oh, it's fun to do, and I've had a number of people just say, wow, you made my day.
Exactly.
And so all of a sudden, it's like, wow, I had something fun to do, and to smile. Just at somebody, and you don't know, because a lot of us, with all the stress and tension going on, people are sometimes in their minds going over and over and over all this little stuff that's going on, and of course they're not too happy as you play that drama over and over again in your mind,
right?
And someone just look at you and smile, you
right.
can interrupt all that, and it's like you see their face change or light up, and it's like, oh, that was fun.
Let me tell you a powerful story about a smile. A friend shared this with me. He was standing on a corner of a very busy street, and his thought was, how am I going to kill myself? Am I going to put a gun to my head? Am I going to swallow pills? This is what he's thinking as he's standing on the corner. And a car pulls up, light changes, a car pulls up, and a woman leans over, smiles at him, kind of motions for him to go in front of him, and the smile on her face and probably the grace that she projected out to this man changed his life. He never met her, never thanked her, but just a smile changed this man's life, and he obviously did not commit suicide and had a little bit of hope. So I think that's what you do. You must do that, Kenneth. You give people laughter, but I'm sure you deliver hope as well.
Well, it's to me just a chance to let some of the God that's in all of us be shared with another.
Exactly. And connecting on a very fundamental level like that.
Yeah.
That's why we're here.
Yeah, and to see that consistently it can make a difference, and you don't know, because most of the time we don't stay connected to that person that we've shared something kind with, but that kindness can literally, like this fella, take someone who is on the death's doorstep and ready to do themselves in and figuring
right.
out the best way to go, and all
right.
of a sudden, now, so I want to live.
I want to live, exactly. And in my travels and in my book that we're discussing, Where Am I Going?, I met a man, Reuben Beckham. I met him for a cup of coffee, and sometimes, most of the time actually, the most profound moments in our life depend on a cup of coffee, a nail appointment, or a chance meeting with someone. But this man changed my life with a cup of coffee, actually. And he had a near-death experience that he was sharing with me. And what he said was, in his near-death experience, when you get over to the other side, you have something called a life review, and you get to feel everything that you've caused another human being to feel, good or bad. And just think, Kenneth, of what you have waiting for you, all of that laughter that you'll have waiting for you on the other side because of the way that you make someone feel. And that was such a powerful statement for me. I've never forgotten it. And every single day since I met Reuben Beckham, I've made it a point to find a stranger that I can just do something for, just anything to make them feel a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. And apparently this is a key component of the spiritual journey of where am I going?
I think so. I think it's a fundamental fact that we're all connected. Wouldn't you agree with that? We are all connected.
Well, that's what the quantum physicists are telling us, that that we're connected. And how do you figure it out? Well, everything is energy. So if we're energy and it's all energy, then we're connected. So that's a nice foundational thought. Now, how do we translate that into daily interactions? And you've looked into this profoundly.
Well, my grandmother was Cherokee, and she used to say, and this is really ironic because obviously she was born in the early 1900s, and she lived way before the internet, but she said the Cherokee people described it as the web, that we're all a part of this great big web. What happens to you happens to me. What happens across the world affects me. And I can't begin to tell you the people that live, breathe, and die in my community and never once think about what's happening across the border. It never crosses their mind because the violence doesn't cross over with it. And I can't help but every single day look across the border and think to myself, what can I possibly do for these people? What can I do? And if you think about it, Kenneth, think about if you have 8 people murdered every single day in Ciudad Juarez, think about the people that are murdered, their wives, their husbands, their brothers, their sisters, the orphans left behind. That's my next big cause. What are we going to do with the orphans in Ciudad Juarez? So there's some, I mean, we are all connected, absolutely, without a doubt. What happens to you happens to me, good or bad. And I think it's all our responsibility as humans sharing this planet. And that includes animals, plant, everything, taking care of the world. That's very fundamental in Genesis at the very beginning of that ancient scripture. We were created to take care of the earth. How are we doing on that, do you think, Kenneth?
Well, I can tell you we haven't totally destroyed it.
We haven't destroyed it, but boy, are we trying.
Yes, and that's the part where there's so much of this process that you talk about as intensity, to me, is this birthing process that we're going through, the butterfly, the caterpillar that goes into the cocoon.
Right, exactly. And I give an example of that in the last chapter of my book, Where Am I Going? Yes, a beautiful story. My grandfather and I found a cocoon in his tomato garden. And I had never seen it. I was 5 years old, never seen it before. And he took it inside and he told me that in this cocoon was this magnificent creature and that it would break through and become a butterfly. And this is the same man that at Christmas that said, hey, do you want to go see a lot of lights? And of course, you naturally trust your grandfather and you think you're going to go to some beautiful house. And he took me to a used car lot. So I had my doubts that this thing was going to turn into a butterfly. And every day I would run downstairs and burst into the kitchen and it was the same. And then one day it felt differently. And I came downstairs and slowly opened the kitchen door and there was this beautiful butterfly. And my grandfather was sipping coffee across the room and he looked at me and he said, Michelle, a butterfly is a symbol for our soul. And I have never forgotten that, Kenneth, because I do think, like this butterfly, we all go through these spiritual stages and we hopefully will come out as a butterfly, but it's really up to us whether we do or whether we don't.
Yeah. And what's so interesting too, in the metaphors I've studied more about the process in the cocoon, the caterpillar goes in and then it just gets liquefied.
Right.
Here we are, we have our body, and then there's the caterpillar, it's got its body, and all of a sudden it's like, well, now turn to liquid. It's just like everything is destroyed to make way for this new beginning.
Exactly. And I think that you just described what I call the dark night of the soul stage. And what I'm talking about there is exactly what you're saying. We have to completely just be melted on the inside to feel the abandonment of the source, of the divine, before we can really surrender and transform. Because we have to figure out we're not really in control. And what I mean by that, certainly I'm in control of this conversation. You know, I can pick up the phone, I can be in control of that. But as far as the big things in life, really, if we just surrender the outcome, don't contaminate what could happen with our own small ideas, I think we would all be really shocked as to what possibly could happen. But we're such control freaks, aren't we? I know I am. I'm a big control freak. But look at the butterfly in your example. It just nature process let that caterpillar, who's blind, by the way, blind, goes in, becomes this liquid state, turns into this magnificent, beautiful creature that can see and fly. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
And that can happen to every single one of us, every one of us. We are the caterpillars trying to, we're blind, and we have the opportunity to fly, and all we have to do, I think, is just go through these spiritual stages, which every single religion on the planet and every single ancient culture discusses and teaches. We all go through spiritual stages in life. Some of us get a little bit further, and that's no judgment. Some of us, don't even try to get into the stages, and that's your decision whether you want to live life on the outside or the inside. You know, and here's, let me give you an example.
Please.
I'm a big golfer. I love to play golf. And it used to be, before I would go into these stages, I'd show up at the golf course and I would pull out my driver and shank it. Then I would cuss and I would fuss and I would, you know, blame everybody else and I would throw my clubs around and I'd get in the cart. But, you know, I'd play 18 holes, right?
Okay.
Well, now I go and I show up and I think, oh my gosh, I'm with my friends and it's a beautiful day and look at the mountains, they're so great. And if I shank it, that's okay because I'm breathing fresh air and I'm on a golf course that's just gorgeous. So every time I play golf, it's a wonderful experience. That's the difference in having this meaningful connection and having this living in this age of meaning.
Isn't that sweet that in the midst of the of this garden, the metaphor of your golf course, if we're not careful and we put our focus of attention on certain things, like how, did that go straight? How
right.
many times did I have to knock that little white round thing to get
right.
it into that place in the ground, we can make ourselves crazy in the midst of this glorious garden.
Exactly. And that's just life, isn't it? I mean, we go to work and we're cussing and fussing when somebody cuts us off, and we allow other people to really dictate our feelings. And that's, you know, that's just not, never a good outcome, is it?
Well, to me, what is exciting is your consulting that you do. I mean, yes, we want to get your book, of course, and please tell us how to do that. I mean, your website and the book, and then want to find out more about your consulting too.
Oh, good. Well, yes, you can get my book a couple of ways. Amazon.com has it, BarnesandNoble.com, any bookstore, or if you go to my website, MichelleCromer.com, I will give you a signed copy. And it's a little bit cheaper. So that's Michelle Cromer with the C, CROMER.com. And yes, I believe that I believe that spirituality and capitalism can coexist. Before I became an author, I was a very successful executive. I was a partner. I didn't own it myself. I was a partner in a very large advertising agency. And I wrote my first book, Exit Strategy, Thinking Outside the Box, Creative Burial Options for Baby Boomers particularly, and it did really well, and so I sold my shares back to my partners. But I was so fortunate to have had bosses and partners with real ethics and morals and really were the epitome of the Buddha boss, as I say in a book that I'm working on. But we have so many news stories about people that are doing it wrong, and there are a lot of them. We don't have the news stories about people that are really doing it right, like Whole Foods or Tom's Shoes or Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream. These are all companies that invest not just in themselves and in capitalism, but they invest in the environment, or they invest in a project. And it's just amazing what difference these companies can make. And you and I, as consumers, can support them by buying stock or their products. So that's what I mean about spiritual capitalism. It can coexist, and it must coexist for us to survive, I think, what we're going through right now, which is, you know, the greed. There's nothing wrong with capitalism at all. What is wrong is sometimes we elect people on the boards of directors that don't have morals or standards, and we have CEOs and presidents that certainly don't, and they're really motivated by greed, and that's never good, never a good outcome. And that's how we got into the situation that we're in. And we can get out of it by looking at things differently. You know, like Einstein said, you can't solve the same problem the same way you got the problem. You got to look at different, you know, you got to look at different solutions. So
exactly.
If all of us would stand up and really research these companies and the products that we buy every day, we have power in our buying decisions and in our investment opportunities. So I am a big component on really, really supporting people that are doing it right and doing it right by the world. There's a copy.
How do we find out more of this? Because I seldom see any of this on the news.
I know. You know, and isn't that a shame? Because bad news seems to sell. And I am going to start on my website, MichelleCromer.com. I'm going to start listing companies that really are making a difference in the world. I just stumbled on this company out of Canada, Ithaca Coffee. This is the most amazing story. they decided that they wanted to go down to Colombia, which is just, you know, ransacked by the drug cartels down there. And they went, you know, as I was saying about the orphans in Ciudad Juarez, there's a lot of orphans in Colombia. So they thought, well, you know what, I'm not just going to build an orphanage. I'm going to make this a village that's sustainable, not just for the orphans, but all the people. So they went in, and they're actually dry roasting their coffee down in this village and hiring the local people. And then the orphans are able, to, after school, they built a school on this in the village to help and learn a work ethic. And they even built the buildings by putting dirt into old big coffee bags. And then they would go ahead and do the drywall and everything. Yeah, it's just, see, there are companies, Kenneth, that are you've never even heard of, and don't you want to drink their coffee because you know they're investing in our communities. And when I say community, we're a global community now, whether people believe it or not. If you don't believe that, wake up every day like I do. My old, you know, I have a financial background, and I look at what's happening in the Asian markets and what the heck happened in Europe, because I know that it's going to affect the trading. It's just an old habit I can't get out of, and that's another reason why I wake up early. I always woke up early when I was down on Wall Street in New York back in another life, and, you know, trading, I wasn't trading, I was getting coffee for the people that traded, because that's what I did in 1985 and got out of college. But, yeah, so we're all connected in ways that we're just now, I think, realizing. Ripple effects around the world. So thank you for letting me talk about a completely different project. But I do think that my book, Where Am I Going, is such a foundation for people who are searching for a way to start a spiritual journey, or maybe they're stuck in their spiritual journey, or maybe the divine and the source has stopped communicating with them and they can't figure out why. And what do I do? Or I'm in the middle of a crisis and I can't take it anymore. There's not one more day that I can put one foot in front of the other. What do I do? Hopefully they can look at my crazy life in my book and think, well, if that crazy Texas woman can get through it, maybe I can get through it too.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, what's so important in your work, I was reading about this part in the religion and the idea we keep hearing, United States is a Christian nation.
Oh, no. Yeah. See, that I did a blog on that. I don't know, you know, I'm really not sure how that got started, because I want to tell you, our founding fathers, our incredibly wise founding fathers, made sure that our nation was not any sort of association with a religion. Why do you think we came across the pond, Kenneth? We came across the pond for freedom, of religion. We are not a Christian nation, and I say that having been a Christian my whole life. We are not. And anyone or any politician that stands up and says, we should get back to what our founding fathers meant and to be a Christian nation, you just have to say, as we say down here in Texas, bless their hearts, they have no idea what they're talking about. And there's a woman that continues to do that, a Republican, totally continues to do that. Bless her heart.
Yeah, and to me, this is part of what I'm looking at, the value when people take some time to get your book and read through it. We can start to redraw the, if you want to call them, battle lines, or the places where we draw the line about, okay, well, I've got this religion and you're not that religion, and the Muslims and this, and they blew up the Twin Towers and all this terrible stuff, and that doesn't lead to connecting, as we all are interconnected with each other.
Isn't that so true? And when I hear people ridiculously, you know, say things about their religion, and they say they have this arrogant position of proclaiming it's the only true one, it's the greater proof that it is not. When someone says that, when you're so attached to your religion that you can't even, like I say in my book, have a two-step dance where you ebb and flow and you go back and forth, and then I would say get in touch with your belief system. Oh, here's an example. This is because, you know, I studied theology, and what that means is I've had a test on every chapter and verse in the Torah, Christian Old Testament, and the Christian New Testament. Okay, so I actually had someone say to me in a workshop that something about going to hell, somebody's going to hell, like they're a real judgment. And I said to this person, really? Really? Wow. You know, Jesus mentioned hell 12 times in the New Testament. Now, hell, the Greek word is G-E-H-E-N-N-A, Valley of Gehenna, which was outside of Jerusalem, where they dug this great big pit, and they put all the trash in there, and they burn it. Very similar, they're still doing it in Kathmandu, they're still doing it in Ciudad Juarez, many places of the world outside, they have a pit, fiery pit, the dogs come and try to get the scraps, and they gnash teeth. That's what Jesus was talking about when he referred to hell. But people don't even know that because they have a belief system that's very one-dimensional. And the Bible is an ancient text that is very, you can get right underneath those scriptures and have these beautiful symbolic stories that are just incredible. But first, you have to understand what you're even believing. And it's just shocking to me that people don't even take the time to believe, to find out about their belief system, and yet they, you know, start wars over it. Isn't that just silly? It's just silly.
One of the things as you were talking about this and tying things together a little bit, the when people have been given misinformation and not been provided with this, like the word sin, and we're sinners, someone explained to me that the word sin actually means to miss the mark.
The mark. That's
to
the Greek word.
To make a mistake.
Right,
yes.
Exactly. And you bring up a really good point, Kenneth, because I speak Spanish fluently, as do anyone, I guess, that lives in El Paso or on the border. And many of us, I mean, you know, it's just a beautiful language, absolutely
sure.
Gorgeous language, and you can express yourself in so many different ways. And in advertising for years and years and years, it was really difficult to do translations from English to Spanish or Spanish to English because the words don't mean the same, right? So you say the word sin, and the Greek word is missing the mark, right? So there's so many, like I just mentioned, hell, okay? It's completely different connotation in English, and yet people just take that to heart, and they don't even take the time to go, oh, you know, maybe that means something else. There's a In 1948, the person that was translating the King James Version actually inserted the word homosexual. It didn't exist 100 years ago, and it certainly didn't exist 2,000 years ago. And so, you know, it's just little things like that. If you just know the history.
Yeah.
And as I said to my sister, who is, you know, extremely, an extreme fundamentalist Christian, and I said, Jennifer, if you would just study the Bible. And she said, oh, Michelle, I do. And I said, oh, sugar, not in Sunday school. I'm talking about take a course in college and get to know the Bible. Get to know who wrote them. Or, as a matter of fact, who didn't write them? Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John didn't write Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And so, it, you know, and these people just wake up and get to just it, because what happens when you really dig into your faith, it becomes alive, and you realize, gosh, you know what? Maybe there's something to other religions. I had a priest down the street. My son went to a Catholic high school, and we're not Catholic, but it was a really good school. And a priest said something to me I will never forget because we were talking about Buddhism and Islam and, you know, and all the different components. And he said, Michelle, every religion on the planet has a nugget of truth. And when you find that nugget of truth, you will always find God. Isn't that amazing?
Isn't that beautiful? Yeah.
You know, and my, I don't know about your belief system, but I believe this today. Tomorrow I may run into someone and read something and I might change my mind about something, you know? I mean, I'm not that attached. It you know what I mean? And I think that really is important. And I really discuss that in Where Am I Going? In my book, I discuss going around the United States, going around the world and meeting people and discussing their beliefs and how it affects me and how a single act of compassion by a woman I'll never see again in Tibet threw me into a whole different way of thinking and feeling.
Ah, yeah. Well, what you're intending and what you're offering is not only entertaining to read, but profound, because if we're going to bring ourselves together as this nation that was this melting pot, mm-hmm. and then it's going through kind of this phase in some places of going back to tribalism. Well, I'm an Italian American, I'm a German American versus an American, ways of dividing people again. And I like, would you share more, from your book and your thoughts
sure.
about bringing values into the public debate?
Well, sure. And let me just say, and I do mention exactly what you just said in my book, Where Am I Going? And I really discuss this whole separation. You know, people use their religion, their place where they live, their political party, they're male, they're female, all these separateness, everything is separate, and they used to divide, you know, how can I divide you from me? And I say in Where Am I Going, if St. Peter is at the gate, he speaks all languages, or none of them, because that's the thing. At the end of the day, every single human on this planet will have the same experience, and what is that? We are all going to die. We're all going to die. And I think that there's going to be a lot of people that are really shocked. And if you really do any research in near-death experiences, which fascinates me, people that are of the Jewish faith might see a cross. People that are Christians might see the Star of David. Muslims, Islam, there is no religious icon predominantly in these near-death experiences. But I want to tell you that something that happens every single time these people come back from that other space, that other dimension, that other whatever you want to call it, they all have a sense that life is fleeting and who can I serve? And they have a peacefulness that surrounds them. If you ever will meet anyone that's had a near-death experience, and there is absolutely no fear of death. None. Zero. At the end of the day, Kenneth, we are here such a short period of time. Such a short period of time. And whether or not we come back and reincarnation is irrelevant, because we have this life right now, staying in the present moment. And if we can just make this life matter in a way, and I'm not talking money or and that sort of thing, there's nothing wrong with that, certainly, but just to be present, to serve, to help, to reach out. Can you imagine how our world would be? Right now, I've never seen anything like it in my life, seriously. I have never seen anything like what's going on right now. All the division that's going on and the lines and the sand that are being drawn, it's just unbelievable.
One of the things that's interesting is in the part of the Jewish faith, there's a reading, and it basically talks about the weeds will grow prolifically to the point where they can no longer be ignored, so that they can be cut down.
Right.
And,
that is right.
And it's been interesting. My backyard, as I'm making it pure for planting food, the weeds have had several rounds of their fun, and they grow and I pull them, and they grow and I pull them, mm-hmm. and now it's like, well, now they're not coming back as much. I'm having the soil stay more pure because I've been diligent about pulling things out. Thomas Jefferson said the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. So how much are we watching over the thoughts? Because the weeds of doubt, the weeds of despair, the weeds of hatred, the weeds of divisiveness are rampant. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, so how do we keep on top of that to keep pulling them and planting the flowers in their place of the beautiful thoughts?
Yeah, exactly. And I discuss this and Where Am I Going? And you know what we do? We're in charge of our own life and our own thoughts. We can manage our thoughts. So if we have a fear that comes into our body, that you mentioned 9/11, we just had the big anniversary, and if we have this fear from people on the other side of the world, then you know what I would suggest people do? I would suggest people get on the internet, because we have, as in no other time in history, we have information at our fingertips, and get to know, get to learn, read about people on the other side of the world and what are their joys and sorrows. And I think that they'll find they're not that different from us. And certainly there are people in America and China and anywhere that you go that are going to be people that are greedy or they're quote unquote evil, or, you know, and that's just our business is to stay true to ourselves and to gain our balance and our center and to stand strong in our values and in our morals and what is it that we believe, and really ask ourselves, why do we believe it? And I go through a process, an exercise that people can actually go through in my book, Where Am I Going, as to how you do that. And if you're fearful, how you release that fear. Because that is, I really talk a lot about expressing our emotions, and we should feel our emotions. But fear is something that actually, this is a Torah. They, you know, if you're feeling fear, then you can't be close to the source. It's an opposite reaction. So I would just encourage everyone, like you're doing in this wonderful, beautiful metaphor, Kenneth, that you just described in weeding your garden. Well, what can we do? We can weed out our prejudices. We can weed out our fear. We can weed out things that aren't working for us. And we can certainly help our children and raise them to have an understanding and compassion. That's our responsibility as parents, to teach our kids to be compassionate by example. That's how we do that. Not just reading about it, you know, but showing our compassion.
It's not do as I say, not as I do.
Right.
We
exactly.
We have to lead by example.
And I have to tell you, this younger generation is so, I'm so impressed with them. My son, who's 18, freshman at University of Southern California, they're going to save the world. That's what they want to do. They're going to take it back from us and say, okay, you've messed up long enough. Now it's our turn. And I see so much compassion in these young people. It's just so encouraging to me.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It's big, big. And it's so important. And I think you put this emphasis out there about education, because
right.
Here we are, in my studies, it's like a human being is this amazing learning machine that you can put all kinds of information in, and then you get to see the results of the seeds you've planted by the education they're given. And so we've now created, through education, a world of divisiveness, a world of greed. And it's like, ooh, okay, time to adjust the education model.
Right, exactly. And that's right. But learning, you know, never stop learning, even though we may not be sitting in a classroom. I mean, we certainly can continue to learn. And we know for a fact in medicine that if we continue to learn and stretch our brains, that we know that that's really helpful in not getting some horrific disease like Alzheimer's. They're having some common components in that sort of area. Now, and also, we also know meditation really helps in that area too.
Ah, and you share some of that in your book, don't you?
Right, and Where Am I Going? I talk about how to meditate, why I meditate, and I give an example of just a simple 5 to 10 minute exercise that people can do every single day. We know that meditation lowers our blood pressure, reduces stress. There is absolutely nothing bad about it, and it didn't cost anything but time. Just, you know, I work up to 20 minutes a day. I promise you it would change your life.
Ah, okay. And you've studied, I'm guessing, a number of different techniques.
I have. I like transcendental meditation, but I have studied. I have a certification under the Buddhist way, which I don't practice, but just emptying your thoughts. And I say in Where Am I Going, when I pray, I talk to God, and through meditation, God talks to me. And not necessarily, hey, Michelle, how are you doing? I mean, he talks to me through books or people or situations or coincidences. But you really become so attuned and so focused, and just everything comes into just bright focus when you meditate. It's a wonderful practice. As is prayer. Prayer is an important thing too. Talking to God, my grandma used to say, you have to have when you have a relationship with somebody, you talk to them. So that's why we grew up praying in my family. You want to have a relationship? Talk to them. And that's basically all that prayer is.
Yes.
Just talking to the source.
Right. And to me, one of the things that I've liked in my studies over the years is the idea that we're talking to an ever-loving God,
right,
not a vengeful God. These different concepts, if you look, well, if we assume God is this, if we assume God is that, then what does it grow? What grows from that?
Exactly, because God is love. And as Jesus said in the New Testament, and the greatest of these is love. Love your neighbor as yourself. When he was asked, by one person. Here's like, you know, the rabbi Jesus is in the spotlight. What is the greatest thing you could say? And he could, you know, the rabbi Jesus could have said a lot of things, Kenneth, and he said, love your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah.
That's about as simple as it gets. And I am a big believer that God is love. God is not a fearful, vengeful, you know, God is love. Absolutely agree with you on that.
Yeah, that's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Well, my gosh, Michelle, I feel like we're just getting started, and we've blazed through a good amount of our hour here already.
Yeah, well, I just can't tell you how much I appreciate it. And if you don't mind, I'll again share with your listeners that you can get my book on Amazon.com, Where Am I Going, or BarnesandNoble.com, or bookstores, or if you go to my website, MichelleCromer.com, and you buy it from me, I will give you an autographed copy.
Well, hooray. I like that. That's a good deal, folks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I just want to thank you so much because, to me at this time, where there's so much uncertainty in the world and so much craziness going on, we need something to help us connect to that part of us that is stable and ever-living, and that's our connection to God. And here you are bringing
Absolutely.
This beautiful book at this ideal time.
And if I could compliment you, Kenneth, we also need laughter and lots of it. And you fulfill that every time that you have your radio show. And so thank you for showing up and for giving us this lighthearted look, because at the end of the day, we kind of forget sometimes, because everything is so crazy out there, just to simply laugh. And how wonderful it is that you're bringing that to our present and to into our awareness. And thank you for that.
You're welcome. That's a joy every day to and every show that I get to do. So just a blessing. Well, you keep on with your wonderful work, and beloved listeners, you keep tuning in and getting this good information that my wonderful guests are providing so that we can make our lives better day by day, thought by thought.
Absolutely.
And this is wonderful. Well, thank you, Michelle.
Oh,
many
thank
blessings
you.
To you.
Thank you, and you as well.
And my beloved listeners, thank you. Until we meet again, God bless. And goodbye for now. Let go of it.